It's easy and quick. Just visit WBAI.org. And thank you.
This is Julian Assange. You're listening to WBAI New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
Yes, keep listening, because Housing Notebook is next today with Vajra Kilgour. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org.
Good evening and welcome to Housing Notebook on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. My name is Vajra Kilgour. I'm sitting in for Scott Sommer, our usual producer and host. And Housing Notebook, as you know, is a production of the Metropolitan Council on Housing, which is New York City's oldest citywide tenant union. If you need help with an issue with your landlord, give us a call on our hotline at 212-979-0611. That's 212-979-0611, Monday and Wednesday from 1:30 to 8 p.m., Tuesday from 5:30 to 8 p.m., which replaces a walk-in clinic that has still suspended because of COVID, on Friday from 1:30 to 5 p.m. You can also find Met Council on the web at metcouncilonhousing.org or thetenant.org, where you find our newspaper in electronic form. To join our low-traffic email list, write to info@metcouncilonhousing.org. You can find Met Council on Facebook and Instagram by searching for Met Council on Housing. You can email the show at housingnotebook@wbai.org, but please do not send us any housing problems. Housing problems are invariably far too complex to deal with via email. You must call our hotline for your housing problems, 212-979-0611, but you could write to us at our show email with show ideas, program ideas, or to ask what that music was or who that guest was. Met Council tweets at @Met_Council. Scott Sommer tweets at Scott M. Sommer, @ScottMSommer. I tweet @Vajra_K. And you can also find WBAI online at WBAI.org, We are live streaming there. You can find the archive and join the radio station there, or call 212-209-2950 to make a much-needed donation to WBAI. And, of course, we hope you'll make it in the name of Housing Notebook. You can become a WBAI buddy in the name of Housing Notebook there at the website. And we very much appreciate buddies are so important to us because they give us a guaranteed stream of income we know is coming in every month. And that way we can steadily reduce on-air fundraising, which will make everyone happy. WBAI tweets at WBAI. You can find the station there as well as many other places. Okay, moving along. Rent guidelines. The Rent Guidelines Board recently passed the guidelines that will be for those leases that begin begin between October 1st, 2021 and September 30th, 2022. But if you have a lease that is beginning on October 1st, 2020, you should probably renew that lease right quick because you don't have a whole lot of time. The landlord should have sent you the lease renewal and you should have been able to send it back by now, but keep an eye out if you know your lease expires on the 1st of October. And the rates and the rent increases for those leases are 0% for a one-year lease, 0% for the first year of a two-year lease, and 1% for the second year of a two-year lease in apartments and lofts, with no increase for SROs, rooming houses, and hotels. Westchester, Nassau, and Rockland have a rent freeze for that period. This year, things are not so nice. The Rent Guidelines Boards were not so nice. Even anywhere, they sort of, apparently they imagined what pandemic? What's a pandemic? How could a pandemic possibly affect the ability of people to pay rent and to make money? What are pandemic? How do you spell that? So they came up with new rent guidelines for leases beginning between the 1st of October of this year, of 2021. I should have read the previous one before. If your lease is expiring on 9/30/2021, that's the one you need to renew now. But if your lease is supposed to begin this year, 2021, October 1st, for apartments and lofts, here's where it gets weird. For a one-year lease, 0% in the first 6 months and 1.5% in the following 6 months, rather than a 0.75% increase for the whole year. This is going to be tricky. It will be interesting to see if landlords are going to be cute and try to get a 1.5% increase for the whole year or how that's going to work. This is all based, of course, on the assumption that we'll all be rolling in money in 6 months. And for a two-year lease, 2.5%. There's no increase for SROs, rooming houses, and hotels. In Rockland County, they did not freeze the rent this year. It's 0.5% for a one-year lease, 0.75% for a two-year lease. And in Westchester County, 0.5% for a one-year lease and 1% for a two-year lease. I'm missing Nassau here. I'll look it up. And then finally, we would often, if it was wintertime or if it was even after October 1st when the heat season begins, we would be playing that lovely song about steam heat. But the landlord doesn't have to give us heat right now. Mother Nature is giving us all the heat we need, but we are still supposed to get hot water at a minimum of 120 degrees at the tap, 24 hours a day, all year round. So if you're not getting hot water, call 311. Outside New York City, you can call the Department of Health or Buildings, and you can call our hotline 212-979-0611 for help with organizing. Now, we are going to have a very special guest with us to talk about housing issues as they affect people who have been ensnared in the legal system. But first, I'm going to briefly address the issue of the eviction moratorium and the issue of rental assistance, both of which are, I guess insane would be a nice word. But so the eviction moratorium that was set by the CDC expired on July 31st. In New York State and New Jersey, the eviction moratorium is to be extended until August 31st. And apparently Joe Biden has been working the phones, or his people have been working the phones to ask the states to step up and extend those housing moratoriums and get that money distributed that was supposed to be distributed for rent assistance, rent relief, which is kind of not happening very quickly, especially here in New York State. So 40 some odd state legislators wrote a letter to Governor Cuomo laying out all the things that were going wrong with the application for rental assistance and how it's the website. You have to apply online, and the website is full of, are they bugs or are they part of the program? Who knows? But it's the difficulties in applying are there. They're supposed to be working out the bugs, but consider that New York State got $2.7 billion for rent relief. But in New York State, there are more than 830,000 households, the majority of which are in New York City, that are behind on rent. And that total estimated debt is more than $3.2 billion. That's quite a bit more money. So we have something like 46% of the homes in New York State occupied by renters. So that's the highest percentage in any state. So far, 1.2 million of that 2.7 billion has been dispersed. And it's just going like the old expression our elders used to use. It's like molasses in January. It is slow. So, but you must know that if you had financial difficulties as a result of the pandemic, you need to apply for this program. I'm going to put in our in the archives file, I will put a link to where you find where you can find the organizations that will help you to enroll. There's a bunch of them, and that is on the URL is insanely long and complicated, so you'll have to go to the archives to find it, or you can search online for rent ERAP, E-R-A-P, and see about getting help with the program. And that way, maybe you can get it. Tenants who, you have to show that you experienced financial difficulties because of the pandemic, that you fell behind on your rent or at risk of homelessness. And in most cases, it'll cover up to a year's worth of rent and utilities, as well as 3 months of future rent. And landlords who accept payments cannot usually evict tenants for at least a year. That sounds great. If you qualify, if you can find all the documentation to upload and if you can get it uploaded. So I would strongly advise getting help. It's a generous program in the sense that households making up to 80% of an area's median income, which in New York City for a family of four would be about $95,400. Are eligible for the program. So it isn't tailored in such a way that you have to make so little money that we can expect that you can't actually live in order to be eligible, which is the case of so many programs, government programs. It's like, well, you will be eligible for this if you make so little money that you have already starved to death. That works. But in this case, you can make up to 80% of an area's median income. If you don't have access to a computer, it's going to be rough. If you need help, definitely go and get help, because they're going to have to give that money back. There's a deadline on when they have to disperse it by at some point in October, and then they'll have to give it back. And then where will we be? And in any case, the moratorium in New York State is expiring at the end of this month, which doesn't mean that landlords haven't been taking people to court and haven't been trying to evict them all along. That is happening. Many cases have already been filed. So I strongly, strongly urge all within the sound of my voice to make sure, if you are behind in your rent, to apply for that rental assistance. That's there for us. It goes, and the landlords should be also cooperating, because the money goes straight into their pockets. That's, oh, they love that so much. The money will go straight into the landlord's pocket. So I don't know. I just sort of feel like wishing us all good luck, because it's starting to look like everything having to do with this pandemic, massive fail, one massive fail after another massive fail. And I'm sure that Scott will be addressing this again the next time that we are on the radio. But right now, I want to turn to another issue, because in New Jersey, a law was recently passed to make sure that it's called the New Jersey Fair Chance in Housing Act. And I'm asking my guests to unmute, which makes it, there you are. I'll just say what the law, what they call the law in New Jersey, and then my guest will take it up. I will introduce my guest, who I'm so happy to have on. The New Jersey Fair Chance in Housing Act was signed by Governor Murphy in the middle of June. And it makes it so that landlords may not discriminate against people who have been incarcerated. And now my guest, this is so wonderful. This is like WBAI all the way, because my guest is Andre Ward, whom you hear on Saturdays at 10 a.m. On the Count, which is one of WBAI's best programs, if I may say so. And he is also an associate vice president of the David Rothenberg Center for Public Policy in the, at the Fortune Society. So this is all WBAI all the way, and I love it. This just shows how this radio station, how we can work, how we can work together, B, how this radio station works to make the world a better place. So, Andre, there's a law that's been presented in the city council. Can you tell our listeners about it?
Yeah. First, I just really want to say, Vajra, thank you very much for having me on the show. I really want to acknowledge your leadership in advancing these issues around housing and people understanding their rights and their laws, the laws relative to those things. And also thanking Scott Summer, too, for his leadership and each of you, which are just total commitment to making sure that Housing Notebook remains a central show to WBAI and that you continue to advance the work. So I really want to start there as a starting point, acknowledging each of your leadership and your work. And just absolutely saying how grateful I am on behalf of the Fair Chance for Housing Coalition and all others who are impacted by the criminal legal system for giving us this platform to talk about the Fair Chance for Housing campaign and the coalition. So there are several like key areas I want to touch on relative to the Fair Chance for Housing campaign. I know that you mentioned the Fair Chance for Housing Act that was passed as legislation in New Jersey, and want to acknowledge Governor Murphy for his progressive thinking. But it took many, many years and many, many activists to get that bill to a win. And so we are thankful to all of the activists in New Jersey. And we also know, too, that in New Jersey, right, some landlords still may not be in compliance, right? And so enforcement has to also be central to that bill and that being enforced. So just want to say that. But the Fair Chance for Housing campaign is really committed to ending housing discrimination against people with conviction records. And, you know, we have like really two main efforts as a coalition and as a campaign. And just to note, Vajra, the campaign is co-led by the Institute for Justice and Opportunity at John Jay College and the Fortune Society. I want to acknowledge my colleagues and partners in that work. Allison Wilkie, who is the director of policy, and Zoe Johnson, who also serves as a policy associate there, and the work that they're doing with Fortune to lead that campaign. But there are two main efforts that we have as a campaign. One, that's passing intro number 2047 in City Council. That is the bill number, intro 2047 in City Council. And the second thing is changing NYCHA's overly broad exclusion and eviction practices against people impacted by the criminal legal system. And what I'll do today is I'll focus on intro number 2047, but wanted to note the NYCHA work, particularly because that's also really important. Many people who are released from New York State prisons and jails have loved ones that live in NYCHA housing or were once residents in NYCHA housing themselves, and their permanent exclusion law obviously has to be changed. So, you know, we're led by people who have experienced housing discrimination based on their criminal record, with the support from more than 80 organizations with criminal legal system reform, housing, legal services, and help. And when we talk about housing and homelessness and people who have been impacted by the criminal legal system, we know that one of the fundamental things that someone needs upon their release to be successful, to live a life of contribution, and to obviously move away from recidivism is housing. 80% of people that are being released from New York State prisons are ending up in shelters. Rather, not 80, excuse me, but over 50% of people being released from New York State prisons are ending up in shelters. And therefore, we know shelters are not habitable places and livable places for people who are coming out of prison. And so we need stable housing for people. So the problem, right? Let's start there, Vajra, as our starting point. Like, what's the problem, right? And, you know, I'll talk a little bit about the problem we're trying to address. Discrimination based on criminal records is extremely prevalent, Vajra, right? Several of our campaign members are people living in shelter who have income or assistance to pay rent, but they cannot find housing because they keep getting rejected when landlords do a background check. I'll say that one more time, Vajra, right? Like, you have people, right, that actually have income or assistance with their rent. So they have the income, they have the assistance with the rent, but they keep getting rejected solely by the background checks that landlords do.
And occasionally, so, as I understand it, this happens when the landlord says, I'm going to do a credit check.
Absolutely. And I'll touch on that a little bit later, too, because that's also important. And we believe as a campaign that background checks, right, credit checks are irrelevant as it relates to people demonstrated that they're gainfully employed and had the financial wherewithal to pay their rent. And so national research says that 90% of landlords do background checks. 90%, Vajra. So that's you're talking about 90%. So that means everywhere that our folk who have been impacted by the criminal legal system go for housing, at least 90% of those places, right, are though they're conducting background checks, right? Now, this impacts, Vajra, not only people looking for housing, but whole families seeking housing, right, who have a system-impacted member because landlords typically do a background check on every adult member of the household. So that's incredibly challenging. And researchers at John Jay College did a study on New York City landlords that showed that, you know, when people disclose having a conviction, landlords and real estate brokers were 50% less likely to even show an apartment. I mean, that's incredible. That's devastating, right? That the landlords and real estate brokers were 50% less likely to even show an apartment. And so little difference in response for minor convictions versus major serious convictions. So it didn't matter whether you had a minor offense, Vajra, or you had a major serious conviction, right? Over 50% of landlords were less likely to even show an apartment to folk.
And sometimes, actually, then they're not. It's not even a conviction that they're looking for. It could be an arrest. We had a managing agency for the building that I live in sent everybody their renewal lease with a rider. And this is a teachable moment. Do not sign a rider to your renewal lease. Your lease stays exactly as it was when you first rented your apartment. You need not sign any riders. There's maybe one or two, but you do not need to sign, and particularly not a rider that says, as this one said, if I am arrested for any reason whatsoever, I agree to be evicted immediately. Mm-hmm. It's astonishing.
No, it is astonishing, Vajra, and it really insults logic and reason. Right?
Totally.
Like, it's like, why? Right? And that's one of the problems. And as a campaign, like, we're addressing those things, right? You know, we know that the cycle of homelessness and incarceration is well known and is well documented. We know that. There's a direct relationship between the two. And there's an increased likelihood of criminal legal system involvement among people experiencing homelessness, right? Because they're unstable and trying to make ends meet, right? And so we know we have to disrupt this kind of vicious cycle of the problem. And lastly, you know, as we're talking about this, the problem area, before we get into like what's wrong with the criminal legal background checks to begin with, there are nearly 750,000 New York City residents, Vajra, with the conviction. That's almost 11% of the adult population in New York City. I'll say that number again, if you like, Vajra, right? There are nearly 750,000 New York City residents with the conviction. That's almost 11% of the adult population. So if we don't eliminate barriers for people with convictions, we won't be able to make a dent in New York City's housing and homelessness crisis.
That is astounding. It is absolutely astounding. And it has, I mean, we can see the snowball that rolled down the hill with policing, with mass incarceration. It's just snowballed and snowballed. And then what? People are supposed to be punished all their lives?
Absolutely. And this whole notion of retribution and perpetual kind of like punishment is interwoven in within our criminal legal system, right? So the idea of people having the redemptive capacity, right, to live a life of contribution, right, is not within the sphere of thinking and eyeshot of our criminal legal system, right? It's about perpetual punishment. It's about the notion that once you have a conviction on your record, you will always be deemed that. And so housing discrimination based on that really speaks to, right, this notion of our criminal legal system and its retributive kind of thinking. And so that's the whole idea, Vajra, with this notion of what's wrong with criminal background checks. To begin with, like criminal background checks are a ubiquitous part of American life at this point, right? The ease of access to background checks was ushered in by the digital era. Like you can go online right now, look up people's names, find out what they did. Right. And the ease created an assumption that background checks are key to insurance safety. And we know that's not true. Right. You can look up someone and they may have had a conviction 30 years ago and they've been employed, living a life of contribution and are successful. But you are holding them to a poor decision they made 30 years ago, even though they're living a life of contribution and doing that, giving back to the community, et cetera. Right. And so, you know, that whole notion of some kind of risk assessment or that they give us information about who this person is faulty and it's flawed. So, you know, that's some of the things like what's wrong with criminal background checks, right? And this is really false and dangerous as an assumption for two reasons, really two main reasons, Vajra. One, the background check industry is largely unregulated. I'll say that again. The background check industry is largely unregulated. Which means, of course, the prevalence of errors has been well documented both by the consumer advocates and through lawsuits. So, Folka, go ahead, Roger. Yeah.
It sounds not dissimilar to the way in which people have been deprived of the right to vote because their name resembled the name of somebody else. It's like, oh, you know what? Your name is John Smith and you live in New York City and there's a John Smith who lives in California. You must be voting in two places. level of corruption and not even beginning to think. Wait a minute, you know, something is wrong with this picture.
No, absolutely, Vajra. And it's totally correct, right? It is something wrong with this picture, something horribly wrong and really devastatingly wrong because it has a disparate impact on people. And in fact, you know, a recent New York Times article had highlighted that even people without criminal records who were denied housing because of incorrect background checks, right? And so, you know, we're talking about like people without criminal convictions, right? Who had just a wrong name, as you mentioned, right? Relative to voting, they were denied housing because of incorrect background checks. Like these instances are not outliers, Vajra, right? They are regular occurrences, which is horrible, right? And so there's another reason, right? The second reason, right? The criminal legal system is fundamentally racist and flawed. Let's just be frank, Vajra. It's like what it is, right? Black and brown people right, are those among whom are the most involved in the criminal legal system among all ethnic groups. And so we know that following all the way, beginning with slavery all the way up to now, the convict lease system, et cetera, that the prisons and jails are a reflection of the racist practices of the criminal legal system. Right.
And there's always a new wrinkle. I'm just going to take a second to do a station identification.
Absolutely.
You're tuned
I'm familiar
to w-
with that.
You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. The time is 8:30. And my name is Vajra Kilgour, sitting in for Scott Somer on Housing Notebook. And my wonderful guest is Andre Ward, who is also the host of On the Count. And I wanted to say that, you know, we sort of know from the new Jim Crow how this has played out most recently. But what happens is that it's kind of like there's an expression in Spanish, echa la trampa. So as soon as you make a law, somebody makes a fiddle for it, you know, like a way of fiddling with it. So as soon as you could fix one way of incarcerating people that is outrageously racist and insane, then somebody thinks of a new way to do it. So the war on drugs, in my opinion, was essentially a war on black and brown people, and it locked up black and brown people, and still does, during their prime reproductive years. So as far as I'm concerned, it's genocidal. And then we see the same thing with these quotas in New York City. it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop.
And you're correct, Vajra. And those are sentiments too, as a Fair Chance Housing campaign and coalition, right? That police and the criminal legal system targets Black and Latinx people and largely ignores crimes committed by wealthy white people. I mean, you can Google criminal charges for the 2008 financial crisis. And if you want to see a stark example of this, right, that 2008 financial crisis involved wealthy white people mostly, and they were like least penalized for those things relative to Black and Latinx and poor folk, obviously, who are involved in a sub-economy because of the deprivation to access and resources, et cetera.
Well, right? Those wealthy white people were actually rewarded, and they were hugely rewarded with our tax dollars. But I think it's also probably fair to say that you don't have to be a wealthy white person to get favorable treatment in this system. You could be middle class.
Sure.
You could even be working class.
Sure. No, you're right, Vajra. It's so true.
It's color-coded.
Absolutely. It's absolutely color-coded. And, you know, when you think about the structural inequities that continue through all stages of the criminal legal system, it really results in disparities in charging and plea bargaining decisions by prosecutors and in evidentiary and sentencing decisions by judges, right? And so the results of this system, like criminal records, are the products of an ineffective and biased process. And, you know, it's inherently like unreliable, erroneous, like ineffective, right? And those are like the two things that we kind of focus on, these main reasons, right? As we talk about like what's wrong with the criminal legal system, right? And we talk about specific issues as it relates to Black Lives Matters, right, Vajra? You know, after the killing of George Floyd at the hands of the police in May, a lot of the racism of the system was exposed. And the problems with the criminal legal system aren't just about like police killing Black and Latinx men and women. The many other racially disparate harms through the arrest and prosecution are well documented in research on charging decisions, evidence, the bias in favor of police testimony, right? All those things are like clear and evident and documented, right? Even the National Academy of Science found that the USA's law enforcement and criminal legal system targets Black and brown people.
Right.
And National Association of Academy of Science, right? It's not like I'm making this up, right?
No, you're not. But even what we see in the news, 5-year-olds being put in handcuffs, children being treated as adults, the kind of I remember one writer who said he was living in pretty much in a white suburb, and the police brought a neighbor's kid home because he'd gotten in some trouble. And the writer, who was Black, got his kid out of bed and took him out. And he said, "You see that? They won't do that for you. They won't bring you home."
Yeah.
It's like that. The whole thing is just, it's so sort of rotted. And even if it weren't unfair, it still stinks. It's still not effective. It still doesn't help society. It doesn't help the individuals. It doesn't help the perpetrator. It doesn't help the person who made the bad decision. It doesn't help the person who was the victim of that bad decision. It doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help the society. It was supposed to be a good idea at the beginning, but for millennia, humanity did not find it necessary to lock people up.
No, you're right, Vajra. You know, when we think about our current approaches to the criminal legal system, obviously it's just rooted in punishment and again, retribution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Danielle Sarrett has written a seminal work, Until We Reckon, right? As it relates to restorative justice practices, as it relates to people who have caused harm, right? Or responsible for causing harm, and the people who have obviously been impacted as harm parties, right? By the person that caused harm. And so we have to overhaul that whole approach to how we deal with those things. And so, you know, as we talk about the notion of racism being intricately a part of our criminal legal system, right, you know, we think about you cannot untangle the racism of the criminal legal system from the records that come from that system. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you know, what a background check really tells you is the race of a person and whether they grew up in a neighborhood where there was heavy investment in law enforcement. And, you know, they've talked about this largely as it relates to policing, right? They talk about this notion of the tale of two cities, Vajra, right? In some communities, particularly communities of color, right, it's about law and order. When you go to other communities, right, that may have some wealth, et cetera, it's about serve and protect. So this whole notion of like a tale of two cities as it relates to policing, and it's rooted in race, right, and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, as you talk about specific to people interested in fair housing and segregation, I'm sure that, you know, you, Vajra, are committed to fair housing and changing the deep way that New York City is segregated, but we will never make a dent in race discrimination in housing if we don't stop using criminal background checks. And, you know, well,
discrimination in housing is, here's an example of how, you know, the law is made and then somebody figures a way around it. Racial discrimination in housing is outlawed. Okay. Yes. All right. Okay. So then we'll do a background check. And because we know that policing is aimed at creating records for people of color.
Yes.
We didn't discriminate. I mean, it had nothing to do with color, right? So it's this insidious, increasingly toxic and dishonest perpetuation of a situation that is untenable.
No, I agree with you 100%, Vajra. We need to have you as a coalition member too, right? We need your fighting spirit, right, too, to join us. But we know that, you know, by extension of our campaign, right, that Housing Notebook, of which you and Scott are leading, right, has given us support just by allowing us to be in this platform tonight on WBAI, and we are forever grateful, the Fair Chance Housing Coalition, for your support of our bill. And speaking of bills, right, you know, the bill, you know, is Intro 2047. And that bill, of course, would make it an unlawful discriminatory practice to inquire about someone's conviction history or take adverse action against a person based on a conviction history. Right. There are two exemptions, right, in the bill itself, right, as I like talk about a little bit. And one is roommates, right, where you're renting a room in your own apartment. Right. This is not because we think there's something kind of fundamentally, you know, different here. It's because roommates have a right to intimate association. Right. That's constitutionally protected. So that's one of the exemptions. The other exemption is where state or federal law or regulation requires otherwise. In other words, like where the city would be preempted, right? So those are the two exemptions to the bill. But when we talk about the bill and we talk about enforcement, right, this would be part of the city's human rights law. So enforcement and penalties would be the same as other forms of discrimination. And we're thankful that you know, we have put that in the bill, right, that it will be part of the city's human rights law, not civil, human rights laws, right, so that enforcement and penalties would be the same as other forms of discrimination. And so, for example, someone could file a lawsuit or just make a complaint to the Commission on Human Rights, right? The commission can seek relief by asking law and laws to change their policies. So that supported enforcement of the Human Rights Commission being involved in making sure that the discrimination doesn't occur is really what makes our bill strong and why it's so important.
I think that's really important, actually. And I know that there was a landlord who tried to make the argument that, well, if you're making an exception for roommates, that just goes to show. I don't know what it goes to show. I've had neighbors who were in difficulties, and I have never felt unsafe around. Actually, we had a crack den on the first floor for quite a while. And I always thought their clientele, you know, they were clearly not in the best of physical condition, and they had an illness, but I never felt in any danger from any of them, any of that clientele of the crack den, or any of my other neighbors who have been in trouble. Now, I might not want them to be living in my apartment, and I might not want to give them my keys. But that's different. It really, there's a huge, huge difference between understanding that one of your neighbors has been in trouble and actually having someone in your house, in your personal space. It's just different, and there's no reason to discriminate against a person because they made a mistake. I mean, usually making a mistake is the way that we learn. These are the things we never forget. These are the lessons we never forget, which is why so many people who have made those mistakes are such wonderful counselors. So the roommate, I don't know why anybody would have a roommate in their house that they did not know already quite well, but that argument just sort of falls to the floor as far as I'm concerned.
No, you're right, Vajra. And, you know, when we talk about and look at the data, again, it suggests obviously that people who have stable housing are least likely to recidivate, right? Mm-hmm. Because they have stable housing. It just makes sense. Right.
They have a life. It's the same thing that people have learned with programs where, like in Switzerland, where they have clinics where people can go and get clean heroin with a clean needle and counseling, and as soon as people and help getting housing and help getting jobs, and as soon as people start to have a life, they lose interest in the heroin.
Right.
And so it's the same thing with anything else. People have a right to have a life, and most people, once they have a life, are unwilling to risk it.
Exactly. And that's why in the bill, Vajra, you know, we went for a full prohibition on the use of criminal records instead of ban the box. And I know you've heard of ban the box relative to employment, but we went for full prohibition on the use of criminal records instead of ban the box, because we know we have a lot of experience with ban the box in New York City, right? It gives people a shot to get in the door by moving the question of conviction history to later on, you know, what it proves, right? Mm-hmm. But what we've seen is, once people are in the door, employers can and do still deny people jobs. So that's why we push for like full prohibition in the bill. And housing is such a human right, Vajra, that we don't want to give landlords this chance to run free with their biases, right? Mm-hmm. Because if that's the case, right, people will never, again, we go back to this 90% of landlords on background checks. You can imagine, right, we will never get into the door as people who've had have criminal legal histories in some way. In terms of the bill, we currently have 23 sponsors on it. With the lead sponsor, council member Stephen Levin, working to get it passed this year. So we're incredibly grateful for council member Stephen Levin and looking to get the support of city council speaker Corey Johnson, who we believe understands the importance of this bill and are looking to him really supporting it so the bill can be passed this year. The council,
that would be good.
Absolutely. The council speaker said, you know, he supports the bill. The city administration testified in support of the bill. And the last step, again, is to bring this to vote, which Speaker Cory Johnson has the power and discretion to do. And so with so many sponsors, we really need 34 sponsors to make it veto proof. But we do have 23 sponsors, rather, which is a really strong number.
That's a strong number. But let's just read the name of that intro. It's intro 2047.
That's correct.
2020. And everyone, please call, get in touch somehow with your city council person and let them know it's time to do this.
Absolutely.
They need to be leaned on, and we can do that.
And you know, to your point of leaning on, and they can do that, you know, this is why this is urgent now for the summer, fall 2021. You know, the city council recently passed a law, Intro 146, to increase the amounts of the voucher subsidy. And I'm sure you're familiar with that, Vajra, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was important because the voucher amounts have been out of line with the rental market.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant that people living in shelters with vouchers weren't actually able to find apartments within the rental amounts required. And this change will go into effect in the next few months. And so while this solves one problem in terms of the vouchers and the increase thereof, right, it doesn't solve the issue of background checks for families who have been impacted by the criminal legal system.
Right.
And so to make people, you know, to make sure people can actually leave the shelter system, we have to make sure they aren't discriminated against, Vajra, because they have a conviction. So, and in addition, right, just the other point, right, the city has started moving people from temporary COVID-19 hotels back into congregate shelters, which is another, again, it insults logic and reason, right?
Especially get this thing that, okay, so we're having this, there's this Delta variant, which is just tearing through communities. And everybody is kind of pretending that what we thought would happen, which was that the pandemic would be winding down, that what everybody thought was happening, we're going to continue as if nothing has changed. It's like people are unable to change gears mentally. when the Delta jumps up, that's the time to say, oops, wait, no, it's not going to be the way we thought it was. We have to step back. We have to decide that let those people stay in the hotels. But as if people cannot change gears, and we have to. This is what got us into trouble in the first place.
No, absolutely. And again, you know, we have to create pathways to permanent housing.
Yes.
Instead of relying on an unsafe shelter system.
Yes.
Right. And so end of discrimination based on conviction history is a key part of creating pathways to permanent housing. That's just that simple.
Yes.
But like you said, right, some people just haven't gotten it, intentionally or otherwise. And I would venture to say it's the former rather than the latter, that it's more intentional than anything else.
I wonder if the allowing the eviction moratorium to expire from most of the country as of the 31st, I don't think, what do people imagine is going to happen?
Yeah, you know.
It's like, just stop and think. This is not over. You can't make it be over just by pretending it's over and say, okay, well, it's over. And so we're going to go back and do what we were doing.
Absolutely. Because again, the numbers haven't changed, right, Vajra? Over 750,000 people in New York City are living with convictions, which is 11% of the adult population. Those numbers aren't going down anytime soon. Lay on top of that the COVID-19 pandemic and the variants. Lay on top of that discrimination against housing for housing.
And,
right? It's a hotbed for more problems.
Right. And we have more than 830,000 households in the state, most of them in New York City, who are behind on rent. So add that group in. The people already have housing, but they're behind on their rent.
Wow.
And the rental assistance is just coming out drop by drop.
Yeah.
It's scary. It's scary. It's I can't imagine what people are thinking.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary, and we're really concerned. And that's why the Fair Chance for Housing Coalition is really pushing to end those discriminatory practices. And we obviously acknowledge the struggles of those who are experiencing moratoriums on evictions. And we know we partner with them, right, and support them. I mean, our primary focus is our group, right, those who have criminal legal histories that are experiencing housing discrimination, and make sure there's a full prohibition on discriminating against people. But we also acknowledge the struggles of others who do not have conviction histories that are also fighting against this huge behemoth of a housing environment that discriminates in different ways or practices unlawful measures to keep people from being housed. I wanted to make sure we acknowledge that too for the listeners, Vajra, and to also let our listeners know that, you know, you can join the Fair Chance Housing Coalition and support it by going to www.fairchancehousing.org. That's www.fairchancehousing.org to learn more about the coalition, to get involved, to see how you can get information from the coalition, to call your council members, your elected officials, to make sure that they're pushing to get this bill supported, that they're talking to the Speaker Cory Johnson to make sure that he passes this bill. And Vajra, I know in our few closing moments, again, on behalf of our Fair Chance for Housing Coalition, just want to really thank you and Scott and Housing Notebook, and equally important, WBAI, for prioritizing, amplifying these issues. And we're really grateful and look forward at some point to joining this show again.
Oh, yes, please. Yes, I'm so grateful that you were able to be on. And we want to make another, I think we can both do this, ask people to please donate to the radio station.
Absolutely.
Either give to WBAI.org or go on the WBAI website or call 212-209-2950, and you could become a WBAI buddy in the name of Housing Notebook or in the name of On the Count. We can share.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I really want to thank you, Andre, so much for coming on and addressing this issue, because it's just like an extension of how awful the system is. It's like it put out another tentacle. Is what it is. It's already awful, right? And then it's like this other tentacle comes out where it's the background checks.
No, absolutely. And, you know, the Institute for Justice and Opportunity and the Fortune Society will continue to partner with the over 80 organizations to push this bill. It is a priority. We will not stop fighting to make sure that this bill is passed. And having shows like yours and On the Count and all of the shows on WBAI doing this work, listener-sponsored radio, you will not hear anywhere else. And that's why it's so important that you as a listener continue to support this radio station, WBAI, information that Vajra gave, and becoming a WBAI buddy, getting the premiums that we have to offer, commercial-free listener-sponsored radio, unlike anywhere else on the planet, I would say.
Yes.
That may be hyperbole, but maybe. I would like to say it in my mind, at least in my little sphere of thinking. Please support WBAI. Become a buddy. Get those premiums. Support the Housing Notebook. Continue to support Vajra and Scott, because this show, the Housing Notebook, is so very important. Vajra?
Yes. Thank you so much, Andre. And yes, also please continue to support On the Count. Because that is also, how long did you say that? That show's been on now for almost 20 years?
Yes. So February 2022 will mark the 20th anniversary of On the Count. And we don't want you to miss what that's going to be like when we celebrate that 20th anniversary.
No, I heard the tribute to Eddie Ellis and it made me want to cry because I miss him so much.
Yes. Yes, I miss Eddie too.
Yeah.
But his work lives through all of us, Vajra, you, Scott. The leaders in WBAI, the directors, Linda and others, Berthold and others.
Everybody
right?
who's working there and all the people in ops.
Ops and Sean.
Max and Reggie and Sean.
Reggie and all of them. And people don't know how much work is put in behind the scenes to keep this programming going. So, and it's the station going. And many years of fighting and holding firm, right, in the face of so many challenges, but yet WBAI still exists. So listeners, continue to support this radio station. Continue to support all of the shows to keep WBAI alive.
Great. Thank you so much, Andre.
Thank you too, Vadra. You have a good night, and we'll
Thank
talk
you.
Soon.
You too. Yes, indeed. Alrighty then. So I'm just going to repeat that if you want to join the struggle for decent, affordable housing, give Met Council a call at 212-979-0611, Monday and Wednesday from 1:30 to 8 p.m., Tuesday from 5:30 to 8 p.m., and Friday from 1:30 to 5 p.m., or check us out on the web at metcouncilonhousing.org.
And I wanted to mention too, Vajra, very briefly, tomorrow night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., Eddie Ellis's show will be rebroadcast tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Sorry for the plug, but this one
is it 9 to 10 or 9 to 11? Because it was a two-hour show.
Yeah, but it's been condensed now.
Okay.
And so from 9 to 10, Eddie Ellis's show will be rebroadcast tomorrow night. This came from our engineer who just put it in the chat. So just wanted you to see that. That's
what I meant. Oh, I see. Yeah, well, he says, I think. But anyway, tune in any case at 9 p.m. tomorrow night and see what's on.
Linda said it will.
Okay. It's well worth learning. If you didn't know Eddie Ellis personally, it's well worth learning about all that he accomplished and all that he was. He was one of the most solid and dignified and knowledgeable and good human beings that I ever knew. And I miss him terribly. So tune in tomorrow night at 9 for a tribute. And check us out at MetCouncilOnHousing.org, WBAI.org. Become a WBAI buddy. And Max, I guess it would be time and then some to take it away. And thank you so much, Max, for all your hard work.
Indeed.
I'm gonna tell you a story about the house that blew. I had a good job showing up for 5 long years. Lord have mercy. The old landlady was so lovey-dovey for 5 long years. She was so nice and kind in every way. Every Friday evening I come home with my paycheck, she'll smile. She was so lovey-dovey. My meal's on time. My bath water be ready. Everything be ready. It rocked on. One Friday evening I come home. I said, landlady. She said, what, Johnny? I done lost my job. She said, what? I done lost my job. And I began to notice then, when I come home in the evening time, she wouldn't smile, acted all sad, acted what's wrong, so I ain't feeling good. I said, Lord, have mercy. It rocked on. One Friday evening I come in, she said, where you been? I've been looking for a job. I said, you ain't been trying to find no job. I said, yes, I am. And she told me, the other evening she passed by, she saw me on the corner, leaning against a post. I said, I guess my feet was tired and walking all day. I'm tired, I just can't find no job. She said, yeah. She said, I want my rent. I said, I ain't got no job. It rocked on. I go across the street to a friend of mine. He had been so lovey-dovey to me for so long. And I told him, I said, hey. He said, what, Johnny? I done lost my job. He said, yeah. I said, I want to stay here for a little while until I can get a job. He said, I don't know. Let me go upstairs to see my wife, you know.
Greetings, this is Dr. James McIntosh, host of Minefield, which comes to you every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. Together with my co-host, nurse, family therapist, Richardina Theodore, we delve into the explosive issues in mental health. Our mission is to help you know yourself, release your anxieties and your depression, and free your mind. Only on WBAI, the voice of the voiceless, can we voiceless ones be heard. Support the show and WBAI by donating at give2wbai.org.